Welcome to another edition of Garden Talk. Hi, I'm Larry Mueller. Really pleased to have Melinda Myers with us again. Melinda from Milwaukee hosts the PBS television show Great Lakes Gardener. She's written a ton of books. Can't Miss Small Space Gardening, Month by Month Gardening in Wisconsin, The Perfect Wisconsin Lawn, The Garden Book for Wisconsin, all from Cool Springs Press. And we're really pleased to have her here again to give her friendly advice, which she always does. Melinda, welcome.
Great to be here.
And let me give the number. If you'd like to join in with a question, and could be about just about anything, I think, give us a call at 1-800-642-1234 or email us at talk@wpr.org. Along with your books, you now have a great idea for a calendar here. Well, it's not an idea. It's the real
reality thing.
Gardening in the Midwest. Tell us about that calendar.
Well, my publisher, Cool Springs Press, who I worked with for the Garden Book for Wisconsin and Month by Month Gardening, and I've done a few other states in the area, came up with the idea of doing a Month by Month Gardening calendar. So each month we feature a different plant and then a few tips of things you should be looking to do in your garden. And the photos I can't take credit for, so it's easy to say they're beautiful because
I'm not complimenting my own photography work.
And just an idea of giving you some more information about plants, kind of just something different every month, and hopefully it'll inspire you to start taking some notes. I know every New Year's I make the resolution I'm going to really stick to my garden journal. And I have many, many journals. I can't say that they're all complete throughout the year. And I'm hoping that this will also help inspire you, whether you write down your notes there, just, you know, what were your favorite plants? What did well? What are you having problems with? Right now, as I was driving in, I thought, you know, snow, salt, you know, we've had so much snow. We've been shoveling. Last year, I think I used more de-icing salt than I ever because of the ice. And, you know, what things do you need to change in your landscape? Kind of look, where's that snow piling up? Perfect grounds for snow mold in the spring. Where does the salt end up spraying from the road, from your car? Maybe you need to make some changes in your landscape. And that's really what a garden calendar can do for you. And our friend Phil Pelletier, who I always share this advice, is when you have an insect problem, mark it on next year's calendar a couple weeks in advance. So then you go, start looking for spider mites on this or aphids on this. Because when do we usually find our pest problems? Too late. Now, you don't need to treat before you have a problem, but if you start monitoring it, if a problem develops, you find 100 aphids, which are easier to control than the 1,000 that'll be there next week.
Absolutely.
So that's another use for the calendar. So hopefully it's in, and nothing else, it's got pretty pictures.
It's got beautiful pictures. And how do we get copies?
They're available at a variety of retail outlets. I know a lot of the big box stores, some garden centers may have them. And when I call the publisher to say, where are they available? Well, they'll just have to check around. So sorry, I wish I'd been checking around for you. So check some of those places and I think you'll be able to find them.
Perfect. Well, let's go to Margaret and Merrill, who has a question for you. Margaret, hello.
Hi.
Thanks for calling.
Good morning, Margaret.
Nice to talk to both of you.
Great.
First of all, my clematis or clematis is a beautiful vine, but about the middle of summer, some of the vines will just die. They'll just get black. And I didn't know whether I cut them out.
Great.
But am I overwatering that or?
It sounds like clematis stem wilt, and it's a very common problem with clematis. And I see it almost every year, and it's a little bit weather related. It's in the soil. So one of the things that you can do is exactly what you did, pruning it back. Most of us wait until the end of the season just because those vines are so intertwined, it's hard to get rid of them.
Mm-hmm.
I usually recommend leaving clematis or clematis. It's named after Colonel Clem, but I always say clematis. So, clematis, I usually leave them stand for winter. Good nesting spot for birds or, you know, hideout for birds, good winter interest. But when I have a problem with disease, that's when you want to clean it up. Cut it back to ground level. If this happens again next fall, you know, water thoroughly. They do like to have slightly moist soil.
Mm-hmm.
They like their face in the sun, which it sounds like you're having no problem with bloom. Their roots in the shade.
Yeah,
okay, perfect. And then when we're mulching and things, it's possible to have too much moisture. Last spring, if you remember too, with all the flooding, the snow, there's plenty of moisture. So what I would recommend is if you've never had the problem before, you may want to say, okay, sanitation seemed to take care of it. I'll wait and see. If you have the problem next summer, prune it back in fall, and then you may want to consider using a copper-containing fungicide in the spring as the growth starts to emerge, and then several applications afterwards. Now, I've done some checking and reading on this disease, and I've seen it occur at our botanic gardens in Milwaukee, Berner Botanic Gardens, where they've had it a couple years running, didn't do anything but fall cleanup, and eventually with a little cooperation from nature, the disease ran its course and the plants were fine. Other places I had read in England where they had the problem for several years, even the plants disappeared for one season. They died back, didn't sprout. A year later, they came up and they were fine. So, you know, it's always amazing what plants can withstand. So, you know, if you don't want to take a chance of having black plants again this summer, you might want to do the copper spray. Unfortunately, with fungicides, most of it's preventative. By the time we see the symptoms, the disease has infected the plant. So that's why, you know, the copper is usually considered an organic type of fungicide. Neem, N as in Nancy, E-E, M as in Mary, is a plant-derived one formulation good for insects, one for disease. I haven't seen it rated for clematis wilt, but, you know, if you want to try something that's a little more eco-friendly, either one of those most organic gardeners are okay with, the copper as a fungicide or the neem.
All right. Good luck.
And my second question, if I can, I planted some ever-bearing strawberries in a pyramid-like.
Okay.
And next spring, do I cut back the foliage on those or... what should I do with them?
Usually with the strawberries, one of the things you can do is just leave the leaves. The new growth will come out, and, you know, as they die, you can kind of pick them and clean them up and do a little maintenance. A lot of people will do some light mowing if they've had problems with leaf spot or things like that. Now, with that little pyramid planting, it makes it hard to get in there.
Yeah.
And then with the everbearing, very often what we'll do is leave those plants, pick off of them, and then as the older plants start to fade or not do so well in a couple years, then train a few of the runners. They don't tend to put out as many runners as like the June bearing. So then you can kind of fill in empty spaces with a few of the runners. But usually I find the strawberries, the old leaves fade. As long as you didn't have disease problems, it's okay. They'll fade away and the new ones will be put out, so you'll be no problem.
Well, thank you.
Thanks a lot,
and good luck with your clematis.
Thanks, Margaret. Mike in La Crosse, we're on to you now. Hi, Mike.
Good morning.
Good morning, Mike.
I've got a canopy plant. How many leaves do they lose during the course of the winter? What percentage?
A canopy plant. Is it a succulent?
Yes.
I'm wondering if I know it as candelabra, maybe. A lot of times with your, and bless the internet, Larry's helping me out here.
I'm trying to find out here.
A lot of times with our cacti and succulents, as we go into winter, and one of the things if you're looking for, and I'm thinking it maybe is the candelabra, what I know is candelabra, always a challenge with common names. Are you finding anything, Larry?
I've got something called canopy plant up here, but I haven't...
come up with it. Okay. One of the things that I find with cacti and succulents is often with the lower light intensity, I like to keep them in a cool room. That's good for, you know, to kind of compensate for the lower light, run them dry. They do tend to lose their leaves this time of year and start putting on as the days get longer and the light intensity gets brighter in the spring. And Larry's kind of, I'm trying to talk very slowly here, Larry.
Well, I'm not finding the information we need here.
Okay. So. And so, Mike, what I'll do, and I know I'm really bad. People are going, oh, she always says this. I'm trying a New Year's resolution, so you'll have to help keep me on this. But I'm going to do a little hunting when I get back, too, to see if I can find anything. But it sounds like it's an issue with your, which is very typical of cacti and succulents, where they'll shed their leaves, put out new growth in the spring. By keeping them cool and a little dry, the other thing that happens is you end up encouraging bloom that often occurs around March as well, especially if they've been summered outdoors. Did it spend some time outside for the summer, or has it been indoors all year round?
It's been indoors all the time.
Okay. Is it in a good sunny window?
Yes, it is.
Okay. And I'm guessing you don't have the botanical name now that I'm putting you on the spot here a little bit.
How much should that be cut back per year?
Is it getting out of control?
Yeah, when I got it from the lady, it's probably about 5 or 6 feet across right now.
Okay. And you know what? The candelabra plant is something totally different, upright. So you know what, Mike? I'm not going to even go there with you. Can you do me a favor, though? Email me at info@melindamyers.com.
Sure.
And is that a... And I will just put from WHA Radio just to make it stand out from all the other kind of ads and things I get. But if you email me and then let me do a little hunting on that, because I'm picturing a different plant that's more upright with leaves shooting out, kind of more like a crown of thorns almost. So,
yeah, this is a different kind of plant. And Melinda's last name is M-Y-E-R-S.
Thank you. So
okay.
Shoot that out, and then we'll both learn something. I'll do a little hunting for
you. Yeah, if it's a canopy plant like canopy plants from that you'll find in South America in jungles.
Like
that,
the banyan tree. I'm thinking banyan trees.
So. Yeah, these have some, apparently, according to what I'm seeing here, that they have they really do
create an arbor look. Okay.
They really create an arbor look.
Okay. But
and not a
plumeria, or fragaria.
No.
Okay, we'll quit guessing, Mike, and everybody else listening out there. So much for my credibility. I'm one for one. Okay.
Thanks, Mike. We'll see. And it's Melinda Myers.
com. So info com. At Melinda Myers. If you email info me, at. Info at MelindaMyers.com.
Brad in Green Bay. On to you now. Hi, Brad.
Hi, how you doing today?
Great, thank you for calling.
Hi, Brad.
Hey, listen, I try wintering over peppers, jalapeno peppers in pots, and I also try doing other plants as well, like basil. I try bringing it in, so I have fresh basil when I make in recipes. I find, however, that they don't do so well in pots. I keep them in a cooler room with plenty of sun. Is there any secret of doing this? Also, would you make any recommendations on what types of vegetables you could winter over for me? And I'll take the answer off the air. Thank you.
All okay. right. Thanks for calling.
Excellent question, Brad. And I have to say, I was at spending Christmas with some friends yesterday, and they had an aero garden with tomatoes, and they had a little cherry tomato that was orange getting ready to turn red. And I was like, wow, it really does work. So, but they started the plant inside, grew it under light. And if you know the aero garden, it's a hydroponic type of setup
right.
with a light built in. And so the first thing, Brad, is sunlight is very lacking. So adding artificial light will help immensely. The other problem with bringing peppers and tomatoes in from outside, if they're growing in, hopefully they're in a potting mix, a soilless potting mix, but those plants are used to being in full sun. And then we bring them inside and it's a big adjustment. And they're probably already in the flowering and fruiting stages. So then they don't have a lot of spare energy. So what some gardeners have done is taken cuttings from their tomatoes or their peppers, started new plants, and raised those inside. Now, you're delaying the harvest, but you've got a smaller plant to help it adapt to the new growing conditions and may have better luck. I also had a gentleman tell me he was very successful bringing tomatoes and peppers in. He put them in a closet. He lined it with aluminum foil, had grow lights all on it, so he had light reflecting from below and light overhead. And he said he didn't have a great harvest, but, you know, who else is eating tomatoes right out of their closet in the winter in Wisconsin? So those might be some things to try that you might want to get, you know, give it a try for. Because anything that fruits, tomatoes, peppers, need the most sunlight outside. So they're going to need a lot of light inside. They also like warmer temperatures. So, you know, I was talking about the cacti and succulents compensating. Well, with the vegetables, put them in a warm, bright location and then supplement it with artificial light. I think we often think it's all or nothing. Unless your closet's the only option for space. For basil, one of the things I find is with all the herbs, sometimes it's easier to start with fresh plants in the fall and start from scratch. I often find my herb plants in the grocery store, actually.
Mm-hmm.
It's harder to find them in the garden center sometimes, so more and more making them available. But starting with fresh plants or seeds and then start them indoors. Again, not a big adjustment inside. You're not bringing insects. And I would also supplement with light. Basil's usually a good choice for indoor herb gardens. Marjoram, rosemary is, I've got one still going. That's mine that I kill every year, but got to keep that moisture going. Sage will sometimes do well also. As far as vegetables, leafy crops, lettuce, green, spinach, even root crops like radishes and beets, onions will do better in lower light conditions. And then smaller vegetables, so it's one worth a try. I think everything's worth a try if you don't mind the experimental phase, which means you might fail a few times, but the more light, the better. Warm temperatures for like your tomatoes and pepper. Don't forget to have reflective surfaces to increase and maximize that light.
Melinda Meyer is our guest on this edition of Garden Talk. Jim Packard, our producer. I'm Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. On this edition of Garden Talk, we're visiting with Melinda Myers of Milwaukee, host of the PBS television show Great Lakes Gardener, and author, and now we've got a calendar author as well. Growing,
right.
Gardening in the Midwest for 2009.
Right. Hopefully a little inspiration, maybe get you through these snowy, dreary days of January and February.
Good plan. Brian in Eau Claire, we'll go to you now. Hi, Brian.
Hi. I think Al Franken or somebody from Saturday Night Live would love the comment that your guest made earlier about a tomato coming out of the closet. But anyway.
That's great. Thanks. I just have to open my mouth and yes, thank you for...
The reason I called is I bought a tomato... I mean, I bought an elephant ear bulb last spring, put it in the ground, and it only had a couple of leaves that come off. I took it and put it into a big pot and brought it into the house and put it on the south side of the patio doors, and it's going crazy on me. I've got 10 leaves on it now.
Good.
But I've got a couple, three leaves, actually, that have long, narrow cuts in them as though something has eaten it. I can't find any bugs, but I do find on the veins, not the coming off of the stem, I find... It's not a powdery mildew, but it looks a white substance. It doesn't appear to be eggs. I can't find any aphids or anything on it. And then the lower leaves are dying off on me, and I but these long cuts, the leaves that have those long look like they've been eaten out by something, maybe 3 inches long. They seem to be healthy, but what do you have any idea what that might be?
Yeah, a couple things. Let's start with the white substance. Is it look cottony, like cotton strands?
No, it's not a strand. It's okay. it's kind of. I guess the only thing I could explain it kind of looks like a powdery mildew. I mean, I go and I try to rub it. It doesn't rub off. It discolors it. It doesn't break or anything, and it doesn't. It does not come off the leaves.
Okay, and where that is, those are the ones that then end up dying.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. They seem to be the ones. Yeah, and they seem to be the smaller ones. Now, the three that have got those long
slices,
holes in them, they. They're very healthy, and they're the biggest of the leaves and the oldest ones.
Yeah, sometimes what we'll find with elephant ears and even some other plants, and I'm not sure, so this is when we use that word physiological disorder. So it sounds impressive, but it almost sounds like there may be something, and as that leaf is developing that's causing, I've seen houseplants do that, where they almost look like somebody took scissors and sliced into them, and it's really no insect or disease. Typically with an insect, you would see a wider, more of holes or the edges being eaten versus those slices. Outdoors, we'll often see that tattering from wind or cold temperature.
Sure.
Inside, I'm wondering if there was any change in the environment as those leaves are unfolding that might have happened. Since they're healthy, I wouldn't worry about it, but I'd kind of monitor to see, is the new growth okay? Are you seeing that after, you know, certain kind of, you know, maybe you've been gone and your temperature in your house is a little bit cooler than normal? But I wouldn't worry about it because it sounds more like a something that's happening in the plant that's not caused by an insect or disease. As far as that white substance, I was thinking mealybugs, but those are more like cottony strands, and that you would, when you wipe it off, it comes off very easily.
Yeah, this doesn't seem to come off at all.
And okay.
It seems like it's on the junior. I've got two brand new leaves coming out now, and I'm going to watch them very closely.
Watch for it and see there, and I've got some elephant ears, and I've got to go look closer as the leaves are unfolding on mine. Sometimes, too, plants have what are called a waxy bloom, and that's kind of a white, but that usually rubs off, but it's a white, almost like powdery mildew, but like for blue spruce. If you go out and rub the growth of a new blue spruce, it's really green, but that white bloom gives it that bluish cast. Some plants, especially on the new growth, some of that waxy material is a little more evident. Now, typically, you can rub it off. Now, these are new leaves, you said, that are showing signs of dying back. So what I do is check on the soil. Often when we have big containers, when we move our plants from a small one to a large one, there's a lot of potting mix holding a lot of moisture. So make sure that it's not overwatered, that may be leading to some of the browning of the leaves that you're seeing. I like to put my big pots on pebbles in a saucer so that when I water thoroughly, the excess collects, and as it evaporates, it increases the humidity around the plant, but the plant's on the pebbles, not in that excess water. Cold drafts, you know, with that patio, we had some pretty record cold temperatures,
right,
too. And even if you've, you know, you can tell if you put your hand by your window and a couple feet away, that could also cause some of those issues, too. So
okay,
I would check some of those things as well.
Mm-hmm.
And I think watering first, I'd wait to fertilize till you really start getting a lot of good active growth and see less dieback.
Oh, good. You've given me some good things to think about and to check into. I was thinking there for a while it was because I was a left-handed gardener.
Well, that's a new excuse. I'm going to have to keep that in mind. So don't worry. It's because you're left-handed. No problem.
Thanks, Brian. Thanks a lot for calling. Oh, my goodness. Evangeline in Hudson, we go to you next. Hi.
Hi.
Hi, Evangeline.
Hi. I have a question. My husband was given 70 honey locust seeds.
Oh, goodness.
And out of the 70, one of them sprouted a tree. And now it's about 6 inches tall. And he wants to know if he's supposed to let it go dormant now for a while. Or what are you supposed to do?
Okay.
Plant it in the spring.
And I take it it's in the house growing, so it's used to the warm temperatures and all of that, correct? In a sunny window?
He's on the line, too.
Okay. Is it in a sunny, it's inside in a sunny window right now?
I move it in and out of the sun.
Okay. One of the things with honey locusts, just for anyone else that's considering trying, they have a really hard seed coat, so you need to scarify it before you germinate. And maybe you're happy all 70 didn't germinate. But if somebody gives you 70 and you want a greater percent of success, scarify it. Scratch that surface to break through the seed coat. It's great you have one. Now, the issue is it's been inside, and so to get it in the stage to go dormant without killing it is going to be difficult. If you've got room, I'd probably keep it growing through the winter. It will survive indoors, especially if you have it in a cool location, maybe a bedroom that you close off or someplace where it can get bright sunlight but cooler conditions. And with the snow out there, it's going to be hard to find a place to heal it in and protect it. Come spring, if you know where you're going to put it or put it in a larger container, then I'd move it outside and then next fall, either permanently in the ground or sink that pot in the ground. But at this point, it's going to be very hard to get it to go dormant without killing it. So if you've got the room for that little 6-inch tree in your house, keep it in a cool, sunny location, water as needed. And then after the danger of frost next spring, you could move it outside either in ground permanently, put a little protection to keep the mower and the animals away from it, or grow it in a pot in the container for the summer as long as you want to till you find that permanent home, but then leave it out for next winter. But if it's in a container, sink that pot in the ground to protect the roots through the winter.
All right.
Good luck.
Good luck. Thank you very much for calling. Leanne in Heartland, on to you now. Hi, Leanne.
Hi, Larry and Melinda. Happy holidays.
To you as well.
Hi, Leanne.
Hi. Melinda, last year I had a straggly pepper plant in a pot outside, and I thought I'm going to try to see if it'll grow inside, and I brought it in, put it in a bigger pot, and I had peppers all season. I couldn't believe it.
Excellent, excellent. Oh. That's great.
And then I put it out this summer in the garden, and I put some purple cow on it. That's all I did. And it grew, it was like 4 feet tall, and it wasn't supposed to be a tall pepper.
Right.
And
what kind of pepper is it?
I'm pretty sure it's called a Chinese pepper. It was like a bell pepper, but smaller.
Okay. Oh, I've seen them as jingle bells. They're maybe really blocky.
No, they're not real small.
Oh, okay.
They're like a medium size.
Okay.
Okay.
Well, for anybody out there feeling bad, Leanne is a master gardener. I think I recognize your voice, Leanne.
Yeah.
So, she mentioned purple cow, and if people are like, purple cow, it's an activated compost that's a sustainable product. It's here.
Oh.
They're based out of Wisconsin, and they use, there's alfalfa meal, and they've got worm compost, and it's not manure, but it's got sea kelp. It's got a lot of different plant materials and yard trimmings as well. well composted, so it's sustainable because all the materials come within 500 miles, and then it's a great product to put, as she did with her container gardens or in your vegetable garden. In case somebody calls you, she mentioned that purple cow stuff.
Yeah.
What is that?
Oh, no, we would have had questions about that, believe me.
Well, Leanne, thanks for sharing your success. So now you've motivated those other folks to try.
Okay, thanks.
You have a good one.
Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. Wow, that's some success there. Steve in Brookfield, on to you now. Hi, Steve.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Hi, Steve.
Say, I had a question about the flower Alstroemeria.
Oh, yes.
I know it's not, you know, it doesn't grow very well in northern climates, but this year I tried to bring it inside, and it seems to be doing okay. It just doesn't flower in the winter. What do I need to know about when to plant it and, you know, what I should be doing? And I also noticed that there's maybe some rhizomes in the roots when I dug it up.
Okay.
Or some, like, some thicker roots, and I was wondering if those can be propagated like a peonies or something like that.
Yeah, good job with the Alstroemeria. There are some hardy Alstroemeria that are supposed to make it, I think, even rated for zone 5, but I haven't met too many zone 5 gardeners that have had success, Steve. So bringing in was probably a good idea. With anything that normally would be wintered out, this is just kind of a general rule of thumb that I use, is if it's something that's normally would be going dormant in the winter or wintering outdoors, when I bring it inside, I try to keep it in a cooler location, not drafty, but a cooler location and good bright sunlight. If I'm remembering correctly, I think Alstroemeria is a rhizome. It's got a bulbous structure underground, and I think it is a rhizome, not a tuber. And if you can see those growing points, much like a canna, mm-hmm. as long as you have a couple of them, yes, you could propagate. I would probably wait, though, if you're keeping it alive, unless you've already dug it up already. But if you're keeping it growing in the winter, I'd probably just try to get it through the winter. You could move it outside after the danger of frost has passed. Again, just because it's been indoors, it's like, you know, your house plants. That would also be a time that you could propagate it if you haven't, as I mentioned, already dug it up and found those rhizomes. If you've kept the rhizomes, I'd probably store those in the basement in a cool, dark location. You could start them earlier indoors so you get better blooming for the summer, you know, like March or April time frame. Get them growing like a house plant, like you would your cannas and caladiums, and then move them outside.
What would be the proper way to harvest those in fall and put them in the basement?
Yeah, it's a hard way to overwinter them, and most of us don't even try. They're not really known for being successfully overwintered here. So,
no, I mean the rhizomes.
Exactly. No, exactly. And I think it'd be worth giving it a shot to do it that way, and let it go dormant. Some people just let the Alstroemeria, the whole thing, go dormant. Keep it in a cool, dark location, kind of like people try to overwinter geraniums in their basement.
Okay.
I would do it half and half, actually, because I think sometimes with us in Wisconsin, well, all of us have warm basements. I live in an old house, but the basement, the way they ran the heat, is a little too warm. So I have trouble overwintering some things. So finding that cool spot in the basement. So I'd keep maybe some, overwinter the rhizomes, and the others try to keep as house plants.
Okay.
And let us know how it works for you, Steve.
Yeah.
All right. Thanks a lot.
Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. You can join in, too. We finally have open lines again. We can get you on at 1-800-642-1234, 800-642-1234. And you can also email us at talk@wpr.org. And let's turn to Ken in Algoma next. Ken, hello.
Oh, Melinda, I have some hard maple trees on the tree lawn. They were planted in 64, so they're mature. But I have problems with sun scald.
Okay.
And when the bark cracks, what do you do to save it? Because it seems that over time, the bark just keeps loosening up and you get bugs under there.
Yeah, that's a tough one. And there's been a lot of debate on the cause of sun scald and frost crack. And I will answer your question, okay? This is when I used to teach all my students and roll their eyes. Oh, we're going to learn a lot more than we wanted to. Been a lot of debate on sun scald and frost cracking, but some of the recent research out of UW-Stevens Point has found that trees planted too deep, which was a tradition back in the 60s especially, that we didn't want those surface roots annoying us and, you know, dulling the blades of our lawnmower, so we tend to plant our trees too deep. Then we also found that in the nurseries they ended up being a little deeper, so we need to find that root flare, planting them so that root flare is at or slightly above the soil surface. This is to help those who haven't planted prevent the problem. Also, that there's some concern that some flush cuts early in the life of the tree, whether it was where it was grown or before we realize that, you know, that little swollen base, the branch bark collar, is what we want to leave and cut flush to that, not flush to the trunk of the tree, has predisposed the tree to frost crack and sun scald. That's what we feel is causing it. The other side is there's nothing really you can do at this point. I have a huge maple that I, you know, this is my street tree, and that I have a flower bed underneath it. I try to keep it watered during drought. I put it as a priority. I have ground covers, perennial ground covers, so that the grass isn't competing. I mulch that soil so that I can try to create a good growing environment. That's really important for your tree. With bark loosening, if we start cutting in and pulling it off, oftentimes we create a bigger wound because trees do what's called compartmentalize. So they're injured. They put this wall of healthy tissue to prevent the you know, rot from going into the core of the tree. If the bark is loose, you can take a sharp knife and just kind of cut it away so it doesn't get pulled away by squirrels and kids and things like that. There's really, you know, you can spray, but insects really move into stressed trees. And as long as the tree is watered during drought, mulch the roots to keep down the competition from the grass, or put perennial ground covers, those are some things to keep your tree healthy and prevent damage. If you see carpenter ants, they may be nesting in there, and the humidity from their body can increase that rot and promote some problems. If you're concerned about the health and vigor of the tree, maybe the leaves are smaller than normal, turns fall color earlier, it might be girdling root, it could be that the tree was planted too deep and you've got some rot happening underground that's more of a problem than what's more obviously the sun scald. So after all that good news, Ken, what I would recommend is you may want to go to the internet and check out the Wisconsin Arborist Association website, and they list certified arborists for hire, and you may find somebody in your area. It might be worth having them come out and take a look just to make sure there's nothing else going on. If it's sun scald and frost cracking, what you find is that crack closes in the summer, opens in the winter,
right,
closes in the summer. You know, my tree's good and healthy. I'm not seeing insect activity or anything because I'm trying to modify the environment to keep it as stress-free as possible. So if everything else is okay, there's really not much you can do but proper care. If you're seeing insects, you're seeing rot, then you want to get a certified arborist to make sure that there's not something else happening that you need to take care of, or even remove the tree if in case it would fall that it was a hazard.
Yeah, and good luck. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Ken.
Thanks a lot for calling. Yvonne in Brown Deer, on to you now. Hi, Yvonne.
Hello, Melinda.
Hi, Yvonne. How are you?
I'm doing much better than I was the last time we talked.
Oh, good, good. One of the other benefits, Larry, of coming to work with you is I get to hear from friends and former colleagues.
Well, my question is, the last couple of years I worked at the Extension, and we got the seed things from Madison.
Catalogs?
Yes. It seemed like they were, with carrots and tomatoes and corn, more sugar this year. More, it's sweeter, sweeter, sweeter. This your catalog is over the brim. Why are they doing this to us?
Yeah. In terms of sweeter flavor,
yeah,
I think they're trying to get us to eat our vegetables.
But is that a good kind of sugar? If you know, if it's not the corn syrup sugar, you know, maybe it's okay. But because I'm on a heart-healthy diet, so to speak, I'm getting a little leery about this.
You know, that's a really good... And Larry and I were just talking about our sins over the holidays. I shouldn't drag you in here, Larry.
No,
but
it's
and it
true.
Wasn't extra sweet carrots we were eating either. At least
right.
Not me.
No,
maybe
me
that
either.
Was Larry. You know, that's probably a good question. I'm going to bail out on the nutritionist and say that's probably a good question for the nutritionist. We've been seeing, and I haven't seen anything that correlates the sweetness in the vegetables as being bad, but you know, there's sugar.
I have not heard that.
I haven't either, but it's something.
Well, I have.
You have? Okay.
I have a niece who is 30, and she had a heart attack.
Oh, wow.
Well, this is a congenital thing. So her nutritionist told her not to eat carrots and some other things because there was too much sugar in them.
Wow.
I wonder about her nutritionist for number one. I think I'm going to ask Sue Nitzky about that.
I knew Larry would have the expert to follow up with. And I'm trying not to bail on you, but that's a really good question that I'm going home with a lot of homework today, Larry.
I'm going to check that with Sue Nitzky.
But you bring up a good point about vegetables and gardening and what's happening in the catalogs. One is we're seeing a national trend for people to grow more of their own food. And part of that is the economy, and part of that is what we're hearing from people is a desire to make sure they have good quality food for their families. I think this, as a horticulturist, is a great way to get people back into gardening that may have said, I don't have time, I don't know how to do it. I'm meeting a lot of people who've never planted tomatoes, and I just think it's so exciting to get the chance to get them charged up and growing vegetables in their backyard, whether it's a tomato mixed with their flowers or a tomato on a pot or some carrots in a container. So I think the market is going, I think it just, you know, they're always marketing new things. I think they're also trying to find ways to get us, as I mentioned, to eat our fruits and vegetables. I don't honestly know. So Larry's going to let us know.
I'm going to check that out.
Do a little hunting. I will, too, and see what we can find out, because it is a good question.
Yeah,
and,
it's a good question.
Don't have an answer, I'm afraid.
Yvonne, thanks for calling.
Thanks a lot. Glad you're doing well.
Stay tuned. We'll get the answer on that question. Thank you very much for calling. Karen in, let's see, where are you from? Is it Pheasant Branch?
Pleasant Prairie.
Pleasant Prairie, sorry.
Yeah, near Kenosha in Wisconsin.
I gotcha. All right. What can we
Hi,
do for
Karen.
You?
Hi. I was wondering if there was a particular website that you would recommend that would help identifying houseplants. For example, I have one that I'd like to know how to propagate, how to divide it, but I need something that has a good photos of the leaves, for example, so that I can be sure of what it is.
Do you have a digital camera?
Yes.
If you can email a photo to me,
okay.
info@melindamyers.com and attach a photo, we'll take a look at it. The other place, and I'm trying to think, I use their website, but I don't know if they have a lot of house plants. The Florida Nursery and Landscape Association, FLNA. Check out their website. And Larry's going to do that for me. That's
actually
good.
Actually, I was checking something else.
Oh, okay. Sorry. I shouldn't be talking about. So check out the Florida Nursery and Landscape Association. I'm not sure if they have good photos or not.
Okay. I'll take a look.
When I was in college many, many years ago, we used the Hyponex houseplant book. Ortho has a success with house plants that has some good photos. Barbara, and I met her, I think her last name is Pleasant, Pleasant, has a book on house plants, and I can't remember the title of it, but it has a lot of good photos.
Okay.
So it might be a trip to the library kind of thing.
Okay, bookmobile comes right to where I live. So
excellent. And
I can go online and select some things and have them send them out. But I'll try the website.
Yeah, try that website and then check out the houseplant books, because I know there's some relatively new publications out in the last few years that are much better. Good photos, not always the detail you're looking for, so it may or may not work, but a good place to start.
And there is a book called Plant Propagation, and I was trying to remember, that's when I was going online, to remember the authors. There are several books on plant propagation.
The ones that first come to mind are Michael Durer, who does trees and shrubs. There's also the American Horticulture Society. Has a garden encyclopedia. I think it's called, is it Treasury of Gardening, that has some good information. And their A to Z encyclopedia is excellent. It's very pricey, and it's not one that's good for ID. You kind of have to know what you're looking for, because there's several thousand pages, so it's a hard one to flip through and go, that looks good. But in the front, they talk a lot about propagation. That's good, too. So, and I can't think of... there's a couple of different books on propagation that you might check out. Some of the Master Gardener websites, Virginia had a good handbook. I have a hard copy. I don't know if their information is online now, but they had some good things on plant propagation. Arizona's Master Gardener handbook was also on the internet. You might check that out. And so a lot of times they'll give you good line drawings. So if you find out what the plant is, then you can check out, they'll say do air layering or do Chinese air layering or whatever. Then you could at least look at the technique separately.
Thanks for calling, Karen. Appreciate it. Melinda Meyer is our guest today. I'm Larry Mueller here on Garden Talk on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We have lots of callers online, but we have one open line for you at 1-800-642-1234, or just go ahead and email us at talk@wpr.org. Melinda Meyer is our guest on this edition of Garden Talk, and Doug in Bloomer is up next. Let's go to Doug. Hi, Doug.
Good morning, Larry, and your guest.
Thank you. Hi, Doug.
It is very slippery up here in Bloomer. Ooh. We got this nice freezing drizzle.
Oh, great.
It's drive. Been since about 6 a.m.
Oh, drive safely. How can I help you?
My question will be about a lemon tree, but I have a suggestion.
Okay.
About tomatoes in pots.
Mm-hmm.
I have, believe it or not, what do they call those boxes?
Oh, the earth box?
No, it's what they use to bury you in.
Coffin?
Not a casket, but, you know, the...
Oh, the liner?
Something like that, but there's no bottom in it.
Okay.
And my neighbor had it laying around. He brought it over, and he also brought over a bunch of barnyard dirt. And every year I refresh this with 2 to 3 bags of organic cow manure compost mix, and I put in 2 bags of regular barn lime. And I was told to do this by an old-timer up here in Bloomer that raised tomatoes up here. He was known as the Tomato Man before he passed away.
And you get great tomatoes.
And he told me the reason why you either get blossom end rot, you know what I'm talking about there.
Right. Right.
Those are my dogs. That was Twister and Maverick. is either heat stress causes the rot or the soil isn't sweet enough. It's too acidic. So put barn lime on it.
And you get good tomatoes. Is that...
Yeah, and one of the things I was just going to mention with lime is you being in the north, your soils tend to be more acidic. So you want to make sure that you knead the lime before you add it, because those of us in the southern and southeastern part of the state have very alkaline or sweet soil. So adding more lime causes other problems. And he's right about... heat stress leads to drought stress, which means the plants don't have the moisture to pull up the calcium that's in the soil. Blossom end rot is a calcium deficiency, but most of us have plenty of calcium in our soils. You know, if you need to lime it to raise the pH, that's where that calcium deficiency can be taken care of. But you need to make sure you need it. And then also proper moisture, especially in containers or raised gardens. But it sounds like you've got great tomatoes. And you're right, when you do container gardening, you kind of have to make sure you've got a good foundation. It's a lot less forgiving in a smaller volume than, you know, the garden soil you have to deal with, which sometimes you can do better gardening in a pot because you can control the soil, too.
Doug mentioned lemon trees. Do we have much success with lemon trees here?
You know, there's more and more work happening. There are more of us trying to grow citrus indoors. And lemon trees, the Meyer lemon, M-E-Y-E-R, no relation, is a good one to start with if you want to try to grow a citrus indoors. You can either leave it inside a nice sunny window year-round, or better yet, put it out for the summer, bring it in, give it a good sunny location. And there are people that have called me and have had lemons they've harvested. A few have had grapefruits, a little harder because they need a few years to mature, and it's a lot of hauling in and out to keep that grapefruit alive. But the wonderful fragrance of the flowers, even if you don't get the fruit off of that lemon, is just incredible. So if you are looking at doing citrus, I'd start with a Meyer lemon as a good starting point, and then kind of experiment. Indoors, good sunny location, out of drafts. It can be a little cooler, but not drafty. Keep the soil, you know, as it's starting to dry the first few inches, water thoroughly again. If you move it outside, gradually introduce it to the brighter light. When you move it back indoors, you're going to lose leaves because you're going to gradually introduce it to the lower light. And if you can supplement with artificial light, that always helps really increase your success over winter.
All right. Thanks, Doug, for calling. Appreciate it. Steve in Milwaukee, we go to you next. Hi, Steve.
Oh, good morning and happy holidays.
You
too. As well.
I have a question about a small shrub, but I would like to make one little comment that as a musician in Milwaukee, I enjoy the music on Melinda's Your Saturday Morning Show.
Oh, thanks.
I have a feeling you don't get a lot of comment about that part of it.
Actually, we do. That's funny that you mention it. We have a lot of people wanting to buy that, and it's some, you know, through, you would probably know better than I, TV world of licensed music or music you can license. So thank you for that comment, though.
You're welcome. It always makes me look forward to, there's a happiness about it that relates to gardening.
Well, that's great.
My question is about a small shrub. If you could suggest one that would probably be no taller than 3-4 feet. It could spread out some, but the big problem is dappled light and a lot of shade. Actually, dappled light would be the best.
Okay.
In a dry soil and zone 5.
Okay, one of the first thing that comes to mind in that situation, it's a little hard to find, but being in Milwaukee, I can tell you right where to go to look at it once some of the snow melts or comes spring. It's called black jet bead, rhodotypus, and it's R-O-D-O-T-Y-P-H-O-S, rhodotypus, typhus, or P-O-S. You know, it's one of those, former students are having a heyday, you forgot how to spell it. Black jet bead. It's in the rose family. It has pretty white flowers. It does get to be 4 feet tall, but in shade, you're going to slow things down, maybe even up to 5. So just some regular renewal pruning, taking older stems back to the ground every few years would probably keep it down to the size you're looking for. It gets why it's called black jet bead is it gets little black berries, clusters of black berries, and it's kind of pretty. It's not a knock your socks off, but for a shade plant, it's a good option for you to try. So that's black jet bead, rhodotypus.
Great.
That would be one. Why I was mentioning Berner Botanical Gardens, if you go to the new education building through the back door on the north side, there's an old oak tree, a big old oak tree, and there's a lot of hostas planted around it. And they use this right along the side, the north walk, as the hedge right along the walkway. So you might check that out. Currants are also very shade tolerant. Alpine currant, if it's left, it tolerates shearing, it tolerates shade. It does have problems with anthracnose and heavy, heavy shade, but I really like it unsheared because it has a more irregular growth habit, and that's ribes, R-I-B-E-S. The clove currant is a native. It has yellow, fragrant flowers, and I've seen it growing in very dappled shade. It can get a little bigger, so you'd probably have to keep it a little bit, occasional pruning to keep it down to size. Some of the spireas will do okay. You know, what have you grown there successfully, flowers or plants or anything else in that area?
Well, not much successfully. That's why I'm calling you.
Okay. What didn't work for you?
Oh, I've tried hydrangea. The waxy leaf.
Mahonia?
Yes.
The Mahonia?
That didn't work. I've tried some other flowering things that I think it's because of the dryness and the shade. It's very hard to grow something there.
That's what I was going to also mention is that one of the things with shade is a lack of light. The second thing is the drought conditions. A heavy canopy tree like a Norway maple, go out under that or an oak tree after a heavy rain, and you'll be amazed how dry the soil is.
That's exactly what they're next to.
Okay. And so what you may need to do is work on watering, because if the hydrangeas didn't make it, it's probably moisture is the issue. So the first couple years, make sure the plants are well watered, you know, to spot water, run some drip irrigation out there to get them established. Once established, they're more drought tolerant. But I would try the rhodotypus is also drought tolerant, so you might want to give that a try. But I would definitely, the first year, to make sure it gets a good soaking. You know, if the soil's not getting enough moisture and you're competing with that maple, then I'd be sure that you give it a good soaking. Same with perennials. Under my Norway maple, I have coral bells growing, I have lungwort growing, I have some simisifuga or snake root or bug bane. I have toad lily, which blooms in October, that's gorgeous. But And I'm not as good at, you know, I water for my tree's sake, and the ground covers are kind of my second concern in droughty years. So it's taken them a little longer to get established because I'm not as good at keeping up. But if those first couple years, you can really keep a good eye on, make sure they're really properly watered. Once they're established, they're more drought tolerant, and that might give you a help too, Steve.
I could probably mulch that pretty heavy too. That might hold moisture in there.
Oh, you bet. Evergreen needles, shredded leaves, and plus you're going to be amending that soil, which will make it easier for the plants too.
Excellent.
Okay, good luck with that, Steve.
Thank you.
Thanks very much for calling. Appreciate your call as well. You have, wanted to mention, you've recorded several podcasts, and I did want to mention that are available on your website.
You bet. One of the things I thought is, you know, as the holidays were approaching, a lot of us get very stressed out of the holidays and budgets and things like that. And, you know, we always talk about creating family memories. And so for the last, the most recent podcast is on things you can do for the holidays with your family. And, you know, a lot of kids are out of school, which means, okay, I've opened my presents. Now what do I do? And I'm making everybody crazy. And how do you keep busy? And how do you, I want to get kids excited about gardening. So I talk about some things you can do for gifts, ways to recycle your trees, and holiday things. For kids, for example, all the new catalogs are coming in. What do you do with all those old catalogs? Well, you can recycle them, but you can also use them for craft ideas. And so with kids and families, you may want to do a garden family planning session. So everybody get together. You know, Yvonne called about those sugary vegetables. Well, I find if kids help plant and they help tend the garden, they're more likely to eat them, right?
Yeah.
Than if you buy them at the grocery store, the farmer's market, put it on their plate. So maybe you get everybody together and the little ones cut out pictures of what they think is pretty. And the older ones measure out the garden and maybe do a diagram. And you can make collages of your garden you want to plant. And it's a great way to get thinking gardening. It's a good time to plant some seeds. We talked about doing lettuce and radishes and herbs. You could do a window box with that and fill it up and see how it does. You know, I mentioned my friends, they have three little kids, and so the little girls are old enough, and they help plant the tomatoes, and they're checking them every day to see if the tomatoes ripe. And it's a fun way to kind of fight off the winter doldrums. The other thing from previous years, they're all archived on my website, melindamyers.com. I've got things, how to recycle your Christmas tree, how to use it in the garden, how to create windbreaks for the winter, and those type of things as well.
So go to melindamyers.com.
Under podcast, and you can find the whole archive library.
And Melinda will be with us right up until 12:30 today here on the Ideas Network. You're listening to Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here with my guest, Melinda Myers, host of the PBS television show Great Lakes Gardener. Go online to her website. She's got a great one, www.melindamyers.com. Myers is M-Y-E-R-S.com. And take a look at all that good stuff.
We're doing something new and exciting, too. I hate to say this out loud and jinx it, but it's due up in the middle of January. As we're cataloging and created a database of all the questions I've answered over the last 30 years.
Oh, my gosh.
I started very young. So I'm reviewing and updating them, and Don, who works with me, we're getting them online, and hopefully if you look, you have a question, and you know, I always love to hear from you. You always have great guests on Friday to answer your questions. But sometimes it's 4 in the morning, and you need that answer. Check it out. I may have answered that question. If not, post it, and we'll keep building and adding to that database. So hopefully a new resource that will help gardeners, you know, when they can't get through to somebody, you know, live at the time.
Get an answer.
Right.
Wonderful. And that'll be on your website.
Exactly. And I made a note to put canopy plant after I do my research and homework on that and add that. And I'm working on the indoor plant section right now. So perfect timing.
Perfect timing. Carlton in Milwaukee, we'll go to you now. Hi. Thank you for calling.
Good afternoon, guys.
Good afternoon.
Hi.
For you. Returning to the Boyner Botanical Gardens, I had a question about the plant trial plants.
Right.
How does... specifically, the impatiens that were blooming last year, the infinities. When do those come out to the market?
And I'm trying to think. I think the infinities are out on the market. So here's what happens with. I'll just give you probably more information than you're asking. So I'm pretty sure the infinities are on the market. The hard part is finding someone who's growing them. So the seed producers have produced them. Now finding someone who locally takes care of it and does it. So what you may want to do is look at the garden centers in the area and even get on the phone and make a phone call. Also, I think Infinity, if I remember right, is a ball Horticulture. I'm not sure. Mm. I think it's their seed. And if you go to ballhorticulture.com, sometimes they will have growers who are growing and selling their product. Mm-hmm. So if you go online, that's one way to find out who's selling them retail, because that's one of the hard things. Berner Botanical Gardens, like many botanic gardens, try different plants. And they are an All-America Selection trial gardener. And there's only like, it's either 34 or 43 in the country. And Berner's the one that's far north. And what's cool about that is seed companies compete to introduce new plants and be selected as the All-America Selection winner. So Berner receives plants. They have a judge that looks at the plants, compares to the standard. So if there's a zinnia that we go, this is the best. If they're introducing a new zinnia, it better have some better color, better size, or disease resistant to make it worthy of the All-America Selection claim to fame. When that's selected, and they're judges across the country of how they perform in the garden, they have to have a 3-year supply of seed, and then they're introduced. There's a lot of press, a lot of information that goes about. Berner also tries plants that growers give to them and say, we'd like you to test this in your area. And then they report to different companies to say, this is how it performed here. So they're providing a service to gardeners as well as growers to say, you know, these plants performed well in southeast Wisconsin, or, you know, so that they have an idea of the soils and the climate and that type of thing. So I think Infinity, if I remember correctly, I'm pretty sure it's out on the market, but I don't know who in Milwaukee is carrying it. So I'd probably get online and check it, and then also check the garden centers this spring as well. So sorry I couldn't give you a definite location to pick it up, but I would again try ballhorticulture.com, and I think they may have the retail listings too.
Well, that's terrific. I got me on my way now.
Okay, all right, great, thanks, Steve.
Thanks a lot.
Carlton, sorry.
Thanks for calling. Appreciate it. Colleen in La Crosse, on to you now. Hi, Colleen.
Hi, good morning, or good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Thank you both for having me on the show this morning. I have a question about my hibiscus. I have about 6 or 7 perennial hibiscus, but I bought one hibiscus, what I would call an ornamental one, that was 3 hibiscus trees, I think, that were braided together.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
And they had a very beautiful ball at the top that had beautiful, beautiful blossoms coming from it. And then I noticed that there were these little white little things crawling up the trunk. And so instead of infecting all of my indoor plants, I put it outside and called one of the horticulturists in the area, and they came out to look at it as opposed to me taking it into their greenhouse and getting it all over their plants.
I was going to say, infecting theirs, yeah.
Yes. And so what they helped me do is they helped me scrub the plant with some organic dish soap and water. But before we did that, we gave the plant an extreme haircut. And what we did was we had to cut off all the leaves and the blossoms and everything, and we just left this braided trunk. Now, and we left it outside, and I watered it and let the rainwater come on it, but I strictly watered it with rainwater. Now, it stayed outside all summer last summer, and it was coming back, but just one trunk came back, and the other two are dead. And so at the end of the summer now, or end of the fall, I brought it indoors, and it's doing beautifully, and I'm still watering it with the rainwater that I was able to collect last year. And my question is, what do I do with the dead trunks?
Really, what I would do is you could prune them back. It sounds like it's just the trunk left. And I think the only way to manage that is as they shrivel up and die, prune them off at ground level.
Okay.
But you're going to probably have to wait for them to shrivel up and die.
Mm-hmm.
And depending on, sometimes with the braided plants, and yours may be young enough that it isn't an issue, but often those plants, those trunks will coalesce and they'll become one big trunk. You'll often notice that. And so it's going to be kind of a wait and see what happens with those trunks. But if they start to shrivel and dry up, and you can get in there, and then getting in there with a saw is going to be very difficult, or a pruner's. So your really best bet is just to keep the plant that's growing healthy, and then just, you know, water properly and hope for the best. A lot of times they'll just shrivel up and dry up, and it doesn't cause any problem. You don't get rot. You don't have things like that. that severe pruning, and I'm guessing they were trying to just get rid of any eggs or whatever, and that's why they
Correct.
Pruned it so severely. I might have opted to treat with the insecticidal soap and monitor for the insects and leaving, because I kind of err on the side of the more leaves, the more energy,
yeah.
the better the chance the plant has to survive. So if you do get another infestation, you may want to kind of think about that too, especially since you lost two of the three trunks. But I just leave them as is, and then if they do start to shrivel up, or eventually too, you'll sometimes be able to pull them out if they end up dying and drying out, you know, and cut them at ground level. But less is better in this case. I think if you get in there and try to pull them out, you may damage the living
yeah.
trunk, you know, and it's just water properly and hope for the best, I think.
Good luck. Thank you very much, Colleen, for calling. Sarah, in who's near Toma, I believe. Sarah, hello.
Hi.
Hi, Sarah.
Hi. I'm on a cell phone, so I'll try to make it fast.
Okay.
I just bought a property, and it's a north face. I have a north-facing boulevard that has tons of trash, and, like, every dog in the neighborhood urinates on it.
Oh, okay.
And where is this?
It's in Chicago.
No.
And I planted, like, 50 bulbs. And the soil's super gravelly, but I just planted the bulbs because I had them. And my question is, if the bulbs I don't want to fence it off because it's a small boulevard.
Right.
So if the bulbs don't come up, one, can I salvage them? And two, what kind of plants can I plant there to, like, really cover the ground without spending a lot of money on, like, putting a lot of dirt down or, you know, is there any kind of gravelly plant other than a hosta, because I really don't like hostas.
Is it sun or it's a north face?
It's a north facing, but it gets some western sun and it gets eastern sun a little.
Okay.
So I don't even know if the tulips and the crocuses will come up and the daylilies.
Okay. A couple things. Well, daylilies are good, tough plants. When I used to work for the city of Milwaukee, we used some daylilies, some of the shorter varieties in some of our boulevards because of the low maintenance, tough, more salt tolerant. With the bulbs, it's going to be a wait and see. If they don't come up, then I would dig down to look for the bulbs to see. And if they're not coming up, the chances are something dug them and moved them or the bulbs rotted and died. So I would probably in the future, if you want to try bulbs, I'd probably go with some things that are even tougher than tulips, like your daffodils. Crocus are good, but if you have squirrel issues, the squirrels love crocus, but the Thomasinianus types, I've had good success. They tend to be resistant to squirrel and spread rapidly. Squills are wonderful in terms of blooming, so if you want to just knock your socks off some bloom and some good, tough, equally assertive plants. Now, if you put squills in, you will have them. They do multiply quickly, but that might be a nice option. For gravelly, dry soils, I've had some good luck, and I live on a pretty busy street. Similar, I have a lot of salt damage from the plows and animals and similar things. I've had some good luck with coral bells, which will take the sunlight and the shade. You may want to start with just a few that people have given. You know, if somebody's growing the old-fashioned coral bells, nice-looking foliage, a little bit cheaper. You know, you might want to try a few things and see how it does for you. And coral bells would be a good, tough one that you might want to try. If in the shadier areas, I've had good luck with Canadian ginger, which is a native wildflower in some dry shade as well as dense shade. It's not evergreen, so it dies back to the ground. Some of your sedges, some will take it dry, some will take it moist. You may even want to go with lamium or dead nettle, which is a ground cover that takes dry shade, but it will also thrive in sunlight. And if this boulevard, I'm assuming, is surrounded by concrete between the street and the sidewalk and the walkways, that's a perfect place for it because if it's happy, it will grow and it will flourish and it will take over. And you could put your bulbs in. You could put that in as a ground cover. A moneywort is something I don't like to recommend for everybody, but I grow it in my yard, green moneywort, and it hugs the ground. Green leaves, there's a golden moneywort with a chartreuse, kind of a limey green foliage, yellow flowers, buttercup-like flowers in the spring. You can walk on it. It's tough. Mine got started with a flat that my husband at the time brought home, and it's a good horticulture, so we looked at it in the flat for a month, and it planted itself. And it survived in a 6-inch pot over winter where it planted itself. So it's a tough plant, and it hugs the ground, and it'll give you that green backdrop. And what's cool is if you do the golden moneywort, it's a nice backdrop. So then if you put things like Canadian ginger or the coral bells with green leaves, it kind of brightens up those shadier spots. So that could cover your ground to keep the ground in place, and then you could do some other plants. Also shredded bark as a way to improve the soil while you're getting things established, too. So you mulch the bed, and if weeds are a problem, put some newspaper underneath the shredded bark or evergreen needles. That'll improve the soil over time, help keep the weeds down while you get your other plants established.
Well, that sounds great. You know, let me tell you something I learned from a gardener. They puree hot peppers and put them in water and then pour them over their bulbs. So the squirrels don't like to dig up the bulbs, he says.
You know, that's a great, there's a, even some of the garden centers have picked up on that. There's a cayenne pepper, which is, you know, you kind of do the shake and bake kind of strategy. So good suggestion. And one thing I forgot, Sarah, try sedums. They are tough.
Sure.
And
that,
in gravelly soil, that would be great. I think that might be your first choice if you want something other than the moneywort. And I think that'd be easy. You find the right person, you probably can get a few plants to try for free. And thanks for the pepper suggestion, too.
Thanks. Yeah, thanks, Sarah, for calling. All right. Andy in St. Louis, your turn. Hi, Andy.
Well, thanks for taking my call. I appreciate it. We're driving from St. Louis up the Eagle River and caught your show and have a question for you.
Okay, all right. Great.
Live in St. Louis. Got about a 12-by-12 garden plot. We've grown tomatoes and peppers and lettuce and a couple other little things in there for 10, 12 years. The last 2 years, we have not grown anything in it because we weren't getting any much production out of the soil. And didn't do any additives. I'm trying just to kind of think about, I let it go for 2 years, and then I'm going to see if we can restore the soil a little bit. Wondering what your suggestions might be. I also have heard that I've got a wood-burning stove, and I've heard that ashes are good for the soil, but don't know that for sure. So any suggestions you can give me for replenishing the soil in as natural a way as possible, I'd appreciate it, and I can just hang up and listen.
Okay, right. Thanks, Andy. Well, St. Louis is great. If anybody's driving through, their botanic garden is wonderful.
Oh, it's beautiful.
I always have to put a plug in botanic gardens. You can tell why people don't like to travel with me too much, but a great place to visit. Well, Andy, a couple things. A soil test is always a good starting point because it'll tell you the pH of your soil, if it needs to be raised or lowered, and in St. Louis, I think you tend to be towards the neutral area, if I remember correctly, but a soil test will help you. Organic matter you can never go wrong with. Organic matter helps improve drainage in heavy soils, and it helps hold moisture in gravelly, rocky soils. So no matter what your soil condition is like, compost, aged manure, compost you make, compost you buy. In the fall, I always dig shredded leaves into my garden. I think it's a great way to improve the soil. So organic matter, a couple of inches into the top 8 to 12 inches of soil would be great. Your soil test will also tell you what type, if any, fertilizer is needed. I tend to go with low nitrogen, slow release fertilizers unless my soil test tells me otherwise. And here's why. They slowly release nutrients over the growing season, so you don't get that burst of lush, succulent growth that's more susceptible to disease, or leaves and stems instead of flower and fruit. So with vegetables, that's really important. And there's lots of good products on the market that you can use. Since you want to plant this year, I wouldn't recommend a green manure crop. But if you decide that, you know, you don't get around to fixing up the soil and you're going to let it lay fallow one more year, you might want to get a hold of some green manure crops. Buckwheat is commonly used. Annual ryegrass is commonly used. Some of those things where you plant it and you till it under. So you really improve the soil tilth and fertility of your soil. But start with organic material that you never can go wrong. A soil test will tell you what type and how much fertilizer is needed. And that's a good way to get things started. And then when you mulch with herbicide-free grass clippings. If you have evergreens in your yard, they make a great mulch. Pretty, smell good, easy to walk on. Shredded leaves. I live in the city and I don't know where those leaves come from, but there are lots of them out there. So shred them and use those on the soil surface. That continually improves the soil, contains moisture, adds organic matter, and it's a good way to recycle that yard waste into your landscape as well.
Lots of good tips there. Good luck, Andy. Thank you for calling. Sister Ruth in Dubuque, Iowa.
Hi there.
Thank you for calling.
Merry Christmas the day after.
Right.
Yes, you as well.
Okay, well, I think you'd enjoy being at our mother house. About 10 years ago, we started our own prairie right next door. So if we want to feel refreshed, we just go out there and have a walk.
Oh, wonderful. You know, and that's, you bring up a good point. I'm just going to take a minute to say, you know, if you haven't, things are tough for many people right now, and a plant can bring a smile in less than 15 seconds. And
isn't
you may not,
right?
Isn't it amazing? And a prairie, you may not be able to plant a prairie, but just a pot of something on your balcony or in your windowsill indoors. So thank you for reminding us of that.
Mm-hmm. And then right next to it, we have different sisters that have their own little gardens like.
Oh, excellent.
And then we have a lot of good flower growers. So there's a lot of beauty as flowers go. I pray I'm afraid I have to confess that I only have a plastic thumb.
Well, it sounds
but
like you're surrounded.
Rejoicing over those that don't have a plastic one. I come from a family out near Trappist Monastery. My mom was a good gardener, and so we used to help plant raspberry plants in the spring and all that kind of thing.
Wonderful.
But anyhow, my three-year-old nephew came from the city, and so one day he was out in springtime with talking to Grandma, and he said to Grandma, Grandma, what kind of potatoes do you have? And Grandma says, well, you know, Benjamin, they're just potatoes. And he said, well, Grandma, he said, are they baked or mashed? So I just wanted to call you up and tell you that. I thought that's pretty good.
Thank you. And that's another reason we need to garden, to help our kids know that there's a step between planting the potato and getting them mashed or baked.
Thank you, Sister Ruth, for calling. Appreciate it very much. Sister Ruth from Dubuque. Well, I tell you what, we have Jack in Milwaukee online, so let's go to Jack. Hi, Jack.
Good afternoon, and thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm interested in trying to propagate horse chestnuts from the seeds, and I've been fortunate enough to have two in one small little cup. I've been online and searched different websites, but actually trying to find a particular site that shows how to propagate different seeds, like horse chestnut, oak, and that sort of thing. Could you help me with that?
You know, when we were talking about propagating on the break, we were both trying to go, what was that book? My favorite book with trees and shrubs is, actually has a lot of good information in his book, is by Michael Durr, D-I-R-R, and it's the Manual of Woody Landscape Plants, used by professionals. And in his discussion, if you look up horse chestnut and under propagating, it'll give you some good basic information. He also has a book on just propagating with, I think it's Fred Hartman maybe is the other co-author, but if you look up Dirr, D-I-R-R, I don't know of offhand any good sites that talk about propagating. For woody plants, Virginia Tech, Connecticut, Ohio State, Purdue, Wisconsin Botany Department. I haven't looked at theirs in terms of woody plants. But a lot of the universities, my students used to use them when they do notebooks. So that's how I got to know who's got some of the best plant sites. But those often have good ID information. I'm not sure about propagation. I tend to look at Dirr and not go to the website because I know it's there and I have a copy. But some of the libraries do have them as well. And it sounds like with your level of interest, it'd be worth getting a visit to the library and checking it out and checking up on that as well. Googling, I always find university sites are my first choice, you know, ending in EDU. Some of the nurseries will have some things. Off the top of my head, I can't think of a good U.S. Forest Service sometimes. There is, I think it's the U.S. Forest Service.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've been to their site a few times.
Haven't found anything?
Not really. Okay. They give really vague or general information. And
Michael Durism.
Yeah, and one of the things when you're dealing with nut crops, a lot of the nut crops really are best given a chill and damp sphagnum moss over winter if you don't plant them outside and protect them from the squirrels. But you're right, a lot of woody plants have some need a warm followed by a cold or a cold, warm, and cold. So when you get into trees and shrubs, it's really a lot more difficult. So check that. I think you would enjoy the detail that he provides in that book.
Absolutely. And thank you very much for calling. And Melinda, thank you so much.
Thank you. It's always a pleasure and always good to hear from gardeners right around the holidays.
Take a look at Melinda's website, melindamyers.com, and take a look when you're in the bookstores for her 2009 calendar. It's Gardening in the Midwest, Cool Springs Press. You can just go to Cool Springs Press.
Exactly, and that can help you find it. So thank you. Always a pleasure, Larry.
Happy New Year.
You too.
Melinda Myers, our guest, and she'll be back. I can promise you that, and we'll have her on again. Always enjoy having her with us. Just taking a look ahead to Monday, personal fitness, our topic, to begin at 11 with Madison trainer Dustin Maher. And then we'll take a look at the weather with our weather guys. Stay with us. Lots in store on the Ideas Net.